Why We Cook is sponsored today by TechServe. Hello, and welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And tonight's show is all about summer produce and summer vegetables and celebrating those, and particularly one of my favorite foods, which is gazpacho. We are kind of plowing headlong now into the tomato and cucumber season, heading into August. And in my house, in my culinary realm, that means we eat a lot of gazpacho. We make a lot and eat a lot because it's such the perfect summer soup, perfect food to make and eat on hot summer nights, either in its kind of chunky, spoonable form or pureed and drinkable from a glass. I like it both ways, but I really love a soup that's drinkable, something you can put in a glass and drink that's not a beverage, because it makes me feel like I'm sort of getting a lot more vegetables into me in a more economical way, an easier way than if I were eating slowly with a spoon, maybe something hot. But I also like the chunky form of it too. And today I was at the Borough Hall Farmers Market here in Brooklyn, and I bought a 4-pound bag of very overripe tomatoes. The farmers there often take their little bruised, cracked tomatoes and bag them up and sell them. So I got about 4 pounds for $5, and I thought, I'm making gazpacho. It's time. It's time to make them. I bought a few cucumbers, some onions. I went home and made myself my first gazpacho of the summer, although I added some corn to it too today because it's sweet corn season here in the Northeast also. So I got some corn. I steamed it up. I sautéed it a little bit and added it to the gazpacho, and it was really delicious. It was really nice. And I was thinking about that as I was on my way home and after I made the soup, and I thought, why not devote a whole show to the subject of gazpacho and some of its culinary cousins? And last summer, I was visiting some of my actual human cousins in Spain, and at their supermarket in Spain, you could buy gazpacho in milk cartons right there in the refrigerated section, pre-made. And I thought, this is so great. It's so convenient. How come we don't have this here yet? Why isn't anybody doing that? Whole Foods, are you listening? You need to start marketing pre-made gazpacho in milk cartons. It would be the perfect little takeout lunch. So anyway, I was on my way home and I made my soup, and I thought, it's time to talk about gazpacho. It's the summer. So we're going to do a whole show on that tonight. So now we're getting into tomato season, and I'm a true believer in only buying certain things in season. I have some exceptions to the rule, but certain vegetables, certain fruits, I really only like to buy when they're in season, and one of those is tomatoes. I don't see any point in buying fresh tomatoes out of season. They have no flavor. They have no sweetness. There's nothing to them. I'm perfectly fine using canned tomatoes in the winter, but I buy my fresh ones in the summer, and I grow some too. I have a little cottage in upstate New York, and I have a few tomato plants, not enough to really cook with, but a few to make me feel like I accomplished something. I grew some tomatoes. So talking about this soup, gazpacho, you really have to talk about where it comes from and what it is. And it traditionally comes from Andalusia in southern Spain. And a little culinary history behind it is that the name comes from the Latin word caspa, which means leftovers or little somethings, which is sort of sweet. And of course, we know that tomatoes are a New World crop. They didn't really become integral to Europe's cuisine or even eaten until the late 1700s. They were brought over with the explorers from the New World, and people were afraid of them. They thought that they were poisonous. They were used as ornamentals in gardens, but they weren't really eaten as a food until late into the 1700s, and then really embraced about 100 years later. So in pre-tomato world Europe, gazpacho was something totally different than we think of it now. And in pre-Roman times, the shepherds in that part of Spain, in the south, in Andalusia, would eat a cold soup that they'd make out of their stale bread, and they would pound the stale bread with garlic and vinegar and olive oil and water. And it was a sort of a sustenance food. Shepherds would be out for months at a time with their flock. Their bread would be stale. It was a way of using that up, and it would sustain them. And then later, farmers adapted it, and they took that same soup, and they started adding vegetables to it to make it more substantial. And while they were out working in the fields, it would satisfy their hunger and quench their thirst. And in the very scorching heat of southern Europe, it also supplied them with really critical salt that they needed from sweating and the vitamins that they would lose working out there in the hot fields. So it evolved from this very simple soup of stale bread, garlic, vinegar, oil, to something that had vegetables added to it. And when tomatoes became widespread and cucumbers and peppers were cultivated, which are also New World crops, that became a part of the soup. So when those came into Europe, it evolved into the soup that we know of now. But the base for the classic Andalusian gazpacho is still that original mixture of bread, garlic, salt, oil, and vinegar. But then you add your tomatoes, peppers, and cucumbers to it and then puree it. In the old days, before blenders, people would pound it by hand in a mortar and pestle. And the classic accompaniment to gazpacho is little bowls of garnish. You serve the soup as it is, but then you serve everybody an array of little garnishes, diced up tomatoes, cucumbers, and onions, because the soup itself is pureed, little toasted bread cubes, cut up peppers, and chopped up hard-cooked eggs. And people can garnish the soup to their liking. And I really like that approach to eating. I think it's a little more humble on the chef's part. It says, this is what I made, but you can feel free to embellish it. It's sort of the make-your-own-Sunday approach to soup. Or in Vietnam, where I just spent all of June, where you eat something called pho, which is Vietnamese noodle soup, it's the same idea. You get a whole array of garnishes to add to it, and you can make the soup the way you want it. I think that's sort of nice. And there's also a white version of gazpacho from Malaga called ajo blanco, which is a cold soup also, but it's made with almonds, bread, garlic, olive oil, and vinegar, and garnished with grapes. And even though it's served chilled, it doesn't really make much use of summer produce. So I'm going to save that one for a winter show, because that to me, even though it's cold, is more of a winter kind of flavor. So if you want to make some classic Andalusian gazpacho, the first thing you have to do is peel and seed tomatoes. And in classical culinary lingo, we call that tomato concasse. It means you're taking a tomato, you're peeling it, seeding it, and chopping it into dice. And the reason you do this is because when you're using tomatoes in a preparation like a soup or a sauce, the peel and the seeds can be in the way. They can be bitter. The peel can roll up into little kind of tight bits that nobody likes, and the seeds are in there. The seeds add a lot of water. So you need to peel the tomatoes, and you do that by just cutting a little X on the bottom of the tomato through the skin, and then you drop it into some boiling water for about 10 seconds. You pull it out of the boiling water, drop it into some ice water, and the skin immediately releases, and you just peel it off. Then you cut the tomato in half crosswise. Think about the equator of the tomato that way, and just squeeze out the seeds. And that's how you get seedless, skinless tomato. Then if you were in a classical kitchen, or if you were in my classroom, you would cut it into perfect small dice. But for our purposes, for making gazpacho, we just chop it up into big pieces because we'll be putting it in the blender. So now you know how to peel and seed your tomato and how to make tomato concasse. We're going to take a very brief break. And when we come back, I'll talk about the actual recipe for Andalusian gazpacho. We'll be right back.
Program was brought to you by TechServe, www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I am Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and we're broadcasting live today from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I think we're about to get a thunderstorm. I'm hearing some rumblings outside. But anyway, we are talking today about gazpacho and some of its culinary cousins, since it's gazpacho season. Tomatoes and cucumbers are starting to come in full blast. I can actually look out the window here and see some tomato plants growing in the garden here at Roberta's, so that's kind of cool. So in the last segment, I was talking about how you get your tomatoes peeled and seeded, which is important when you're making a soup or a sauce with tomatoes, because you don't want the seeds in there. You don't want the skin in there. You want to get them out. So we talked about how to make tomato concassé. You boil your tomato very briefly, peel it, cut it in half, take out the seeds. And then if you want to make the classic Andalusian gazpacho from southern Spain, you need to use some bread. You want two or three pieces of a good quality white bread. I'm not normally an advocate of using white bread for many things, but in some cases, this is what you want to use. So some good white bread, about a pound of tomatoes peeled and seeded, like we talked about, just rough chop. A cucumber peeled, seeded also, a couple large pieces. And to seed the cucumber, just cut it in half lengthwise and scoop the seeds out with a little spoon. A green bell pepper, seeded and diced. Although I personally hate green bell peppers, so I leave them out. But it is in the classic recipe. There are very few foods that I hate. Green bell peppers is definitely one of them. The other one is orange juice, believe it or not. I'm probably the only person in America who doesn't like orange juice. But that's not in the recipe. Don't get confused. Okay, you want about 2 to 4 cloves of garlic in there. It's up to you how much you want, but they are going in raw. Peel them, smash them, and about a half a cup of olive oil. Throw all that in the blender. Give it a good pulse. How chunky or how smooth is totally up to you. I like my gazpacho really smooth so I can drink it. Other people don't. Some people like it a little bit chunkier. It's totally up to you. Once it's at the texture that you want to stir in some sherry vinegar or red wine vinegar and some salt. You want to balance acid and salt in cooking all the time. They balance each other out. They are complementary. So you add vinegar and you add salt because you want to balance it out. Sometimes if your tomatoes haven't been that juicy, if they're not great, you're going to need some liquid in there. You can add water, which is traditional, or you can add tomato juice, or you can add V8. That's what I added to mine today that I made at home, a little bit of V8. Chill it as long as possible before you serve it because it really only tastes good very cold. It tastes good all the time, but it'll taste best cold. So get it nice and cold. So when tomatoes and peppers and eggplant and all those vegetables that we think of as classic Southern European vegetables were introduced into Southern Europe, the cuisine changed and adapted to incorporate all these new vegetables. None of them are indigenous to Southern Europe. They're all New World vegetables. They all came in with the explorers, and they all really found their home in Southern Europe. So gazpacho has cousins in its neighboring countries, things like panzanella and ratatouille. And while these aren't necessarily soups, they are based on the same kind of principles, the kind of mid to late summer bounty of, oh my God, what do we do with all of these tomatoes and eggplant and zucchini and cucumbers? How many ways can we cook them? So panzanella, to me, is sort of the Italian counterpart to gazpacho. It's not a soup, but it's basically the same exact ingredients. It's an Italian salad from Tuscany that's based on tomatoes, onions, cucumbers, and stale bread. Just like in the gazpacho, we use the little bits of stale bread in there to thicken the soup. Panzanella is a salad based on big chunks of stale bread. And the reason that that is because it's from Tuscany. And in Tuscany, bread is a major dietary staple. I like to say that all Italian regions have their favorite carb, their carb of choice. In some regions, it's rice for risotto. In some, it's polenta. In many, it's pasta, different types of pasta. But the Tuscans are all about bread. And their cuisine is based on bread, and that means that you always have leftover dried up bread because you would bake your bread once a week in a communal oven. It takes a lot of fuel to fire up an oven, and in the old days, it was done once a week. Everybody would make a gigantic loaf of bread, and then by the end of the week, it was stale, but you wouldn't throw it out because it was so precious. So the Tuscans had leftover bread, and they devised a whole cuisine based on that leftover product. Things like panzanella, bruschetta, crostini. Those are all dishes that were invented to use up old bread. And because Tuscany is in what I call the tomato belt of Italy, which is basically from Tuscany south, there's lots of tomatoes too. And so just like with the gazpacho, you would combine your stale bread with your tomatoes, and the tomatoes would the bread would soak up the juice from it. So to make panzanella, which is basically the same thing but just a salad, you take about a pound of stale bread, preferably like a Tuscan bread, a nice crusty Tuscan boule or a baguette. Take about 5 ripe plum tomatoes, the ripest you can get. If you can buy the tomatoes at the farmer's market that are sold as rejects because they're too ripe, that's what you want. You want to just rough chop those, a red onion, dice that up, a cucumber, same thing, peel it, seed it. And you want a nice big handful of basil. Now you'll notice we're not concussing the tomato in this. We're not peeling and seeding the tomato because it's going in raw in big pieces. So we don't have to do that. About a quarter cup of good olive oil and some red wine vinegar. And you just toss it all together. If your bread is truly old stale bread, first thing you want to do is soak it in a little bit of water. But generally, we don't have bread in our lives that's so old that it's that dry. But if you do have bread that's been sitting around till it's rock hard, soak it first. Otherwise, it'll never hydrate well enough. Squeeze the water out of it. Mix everything together and chill it really well. What you can do if you want to is hold off on adding the basil to it until after it's chilled, because the acid will discolor the basil. It won't look as pretty. But panzanella is a great way to use really, really ripe, juicy tomatoes and also get in some other really nice fresh vegetables, the onions and the cucumbers. It's all really nice and crunchy. You can chop it up really small if you want. You can leave it really big. And if you want, you can even just add more liquid and turn it into a soup. Basically, you're turning it back into gazpacho. So that's panzanella. It's the Tuscan equivalent. Italy and Spain are cousins. Same idea, same concept. What do we do with our old bread and our tomatoes? So that is panzanella. And then in France, I was trying to think of what would be kind of the culinary equivalent. And there isn't really that exact of an equivalent, but what popped into my head was ratatouille, which is a Provençal dish made in the summer with those same ingredients, tomatoes, onions, peppers. But they throw in zucchini and eggplant too. And then it all gets simmered really slowly. So we're going to take another little break. And when I come back, we'll talk about ratatouille and the technique for making that and the development of that. We'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by TechServe, www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And I just wanted to remind everybody that Why We Cook now has its own Facebook page. So you can check us out on Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, you want to get these recipes, you didn't catch them online, just write to me on Facebook. Just look for Why We Cook on Facebook, and I'd love to hear from you. You can become a fan. That would be great. And you can also call into the show and ask us any questions you'd like, too. You can find the phone number on the website at heritageradionetwork.com. I'd love to hear your questions. So in the last segment, we talked about something called panzanella, and panzanella is a salad from Tuscany that is made from old stale bread and tomatoes and onions and cucumbers, and it's a way of using up super ripe tomatoes and old bread. And before that, we talked about gazpacho, which is the same idea. Now we're going to take a little jump to France, which doesn't quite have the parallel product or recipe, but they do make something called ratatouille, and everybody's familiar with ratatouille from the movie that came out a couple years ago. But let's talk about what ratatouille is. So gazpacho and panzanella are summer dishes that use raw ingredients, so you need to rely on very, very ripe, very good vegetables because they have to stand up on their own. But in Provence, ratatouille is made by cooking the vegetables. Now, you still want to use really good, flavorful vegetables, but you can kind of get away with things like your tomatoes aren't quite ripe because you'll be cooking them, which really helps. It's a very slowly cooked summer stew, and you make it from tomatoes and peppers and zucchini and eggplant that are all diced up and slowly, slowly cooked in good olive oil. It really is one of the true slow food recipes. The longer you take to cook this, the better it's going to come out. So some purists insist that when you make ratatouille, every vegetable should be cooked separately. And some people say you can just dump it all in a pot and cook it together. And I think I fall into the first camp because every vegetable has a different amount of water in it and different levels of sugar. And you want to really take the time to slowly cook them out and cook the water out and let the sugars develop. If you dump everything in the pot together, you wind up with a kind of a wet, steamy, stewy product. And that's okay. But the beauty of ratatouille is in letting the vegetables cook slowly and caramelize. So I think if you cook everything separately, you allow each vegetable to kind of stand up on its own and to reach its full potential without being crowded in by all the other ones. So you don't want to rush it. You need to leave some time. And you also want to use a pan that's wide enough so you have enough surface area for all the vegetables. Because if you pile them up on top of each other, they don't caramelize. They steam. If you spread them all out in a single layer, then everybody has a chance to touch the pan to be in contact with the hot surface. And you want to take the time and let the water cook out and the vegetables become very sweet and very soft. And that's when vegetables really begin to transform into something really magical, especially in the case of something like eggplant or peppers or zucchini. You certainly can't really eat eggplant raw, but when you cook it really long and really slow, it gets nice and brown and great. And peppers are okay raw, but they're really at their peak when they're cooked slowly. And zucchini, I find, is a lot more interesting cooked than raw. Although if you get a really nice little fresh baby one, you could shave it and eat it raw, and that's good too. So a basic ratatouille starts out with some onions and some garlic, like one nice big yellow onion, a handful of garlic cloves. Give those kind of a rough chop. Put them in a big, wide, shallow, heavy pan, like a big cast iron pan is good, or a big rondeau is nice. And heat that up and add a good amount of olive oil to coat the bottom and cook your onions and your garlic until they start to get really soft and they get some color on them. Remember, we're looking for sugars here. We're looking to caramelize, so get some color. Then add the eggplant. The eggplant is going to take the longest of all the vegetables and it really benefits from the longest cooking, so we start with that. Put the eggplant in and cook it until it gets soft and then until it takes on some color. It doesn't really taste good until it caramelizes, so take your time. Then add the peppers. They take the second longest. So you add things in a staggered fashion so that they cook according to how long they need. So you're going to add a diced up red pepper and a green pepper if you like them. I said in the last segment I don't, but in this I can deal with them. You could use one green, one yellow, whatever you want, any sort of combination of peppers. You could also use Italian frying peppers. Those are really nice. As long as they're not a really hot pepper, you want something kind of sweet. So the diced up peppers go in after the eggplant. You want to cook them nice and slow. Take the time again, let them caramelize. Then we're going to add some zucchini. The zucchini have a lot of water in them, and they tend to fall apart faster. So we don't put them in until a little bit later in the process. You can add the zucchini and some tomatoes together. So two small zucchini, slice them up about a quarter inch thick, four or five nice, ripe, juicy plum tomatoes. Same thing, just chop them up, quarter them, throw those in, add a little bit of salt, and add some herbs. You want a good handful of mixed herb sprigs, things like thyme, parsley, rosemary, tarragon, savory, whatever you have. If you have a garden, that's great. If not, just grab a few things, throw those in whole sprig form, or if you're using loose herbs, tie them up in a little bit of cheesecloth. Throw those in, add a good amount of salt, bring it all to a simmer, and then you're going to cover it and let it simmer for a little bit of time, maybe 20 minutes. You want everything to start to kind of break down. But remember that if it's covered, you have no evaporation. So the water's staying in there and it won't caramelize. We only cover it to kind of get the heat going and get the tomatoes to break down. Then you'll uncover it and cook it until the liquids evaporate. And this is where the magic starts to happen with this sort of dish, is that when the liquid starts evaporating, the sugars will start to develop and caramelize. So what you're looking for here is that, the caramelization. So the cover should only stay on long enough to help the tomatoes break down and then uncover. When I cook this sort of thing with tomatoes, tomato-based sauces, dishes like this, I cook it until the tomatoes start to form a darkened ring around the inside of the pot. You're basically creating a ring of tomato, sugar, caramel. And that's when I know that the dish is ready, because that's when the water has cooked out. If you've ever made a tomato sauce or anything tomato-y, you may have noticed that around the edge. And that's actually the bit that I like to get in there with bread and kind of scrape off the edge of the pan. And really what that is tomato caramel. You've taken those sugars so far that they've darkened down. And that, to me, is the cue to knowing when it's done. You'll also see the oil start to separate out and float on the top of the dish, because the oil will separate once the water's gone. That's how you know it's ready. Don't rush it. Take your time. This is true slow food. Even though it's the summer, you don't want to have the stove on necessarily, but this one is worth it, so really take your time. In the movie of Ratatouille, it was really interesting because the chef sliced up all his vegetables, laid them out in a gratin dish, and then baked it like that. And that, to me, isn't truly Ratatouille, but it was a great idea, and it looked really beautiful in the movie, in animation. But it's the same idea. They baked it until it was really, really well cooked and broken down and caramelized and sweet. And Ratatouille can be eaten hot right out of the pot, but it's really better if you let it cool down to room temperature. The flavors develop as it cools down, and you can even chill it overnight and serve it the next day. But a lot of dishes from that part of the world, from Provence, from the Mediterranean, are cooked and then cooled down and served at room temperature as part of a first course, an antipasto, or just as a light lunch, maybe with some cheese, some bread. Sounds good to me. So those are our three culinary cousins today that are all kind of based on that same formula, starting with those ripe tomatoes that I found today at the Green Market. We had our gazpacho in the first segment, which is a very old Spanish soup based on bread and tomatoes and onions and garlic and cucumbers. We talked about our panzanella, which is the same idea, but it's a salad from Italy. Not a soup, eaten as a salad, which is based on old bread and tomatoes and cucumbers and olive oil and garlic. And then our little leap to ratatouille, which is a cooked version of all of that, that takes advantage of all the naturally occurring sugars in those vegetables. So as we're heading into August, you want to maybe try some of these things out, think about it. You know, we're right into tomato season now up here in the Northeast. If you're in the South, you're already well into it. We're going to check in with my friend Farmer Dave Ramirez in a couple of weeks, who has a little farm project down in North Carolina. We had him on the show earlier in the spring. We're going to see where he is because their season is about a month ahead of us. I'll have him on in a couple weeks to give us a late summer report on that. But, you know, just think about what you can do with vegetables in the summer. There's a lot of variation. There's a lot you can kind of make out of them other than just cutting them up and eating them raw. And take a look around at the farmer's market and buy something you've never bought before. Maybe try out something new. There's always some really interesting stuff there. And, you know, give the farmers some help and support them. It's important to buy directly from them. So that's it for this week on Why We Cook. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook and become a fan. Send a question. If you want any recipes, let me know. It'd be great to hear from you. So that's it for tonight. I want to thank TechServe again for sponsoring the show. And thanks to Lorenzo for producing tonight. I'm Erica Wides from the Institute of Culinary Education. I also want to thank our engineer tonight, whose name I can't remember. Sorry. And sorry. And we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Thanks. Have a good week.
Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe, www.techserve.com.